tuned in to People's Tribune Radio. I'm Kenny Shook.
Our future has already been reflected in a history of U.S. imperialism and capitalism, that our future is already reflected in what we are seeing today. So we already can look at our future with exclamation points versus question marks about what U.S. War and policy means to us today.
People's Tribune Radio is brought to you by the League of Revolutionaries for a New America, who also publishes the newspaper People's Tribune, Tribuno del Pueblo. Ordering and contact information will be provided at the end of the show. Today's show attempts to share the messages of speakers who participated in the International League of People's Struggle, or ILPS, Northwest Conference. The ILPS, as an organization, attempts to unite individuals and groups around the globe with 18 concerns. From number 1, liberation against imperialism, to number 18, lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgendered rights. The speakers you hear today were at the International League of People's Struggle Northwest Conference, held in Seattle, Washington, in preparation for the ILPS International Assembly. We begin with a brief introduction from Gabriella Network member Donna Danina, who speaks about the ILPS as well as her experience at the 2004 Second International Assembly held in Eindhoven, Netherlands.
The International League of People's Struggle, or the ILPS, is a call to unite all anti-imperialist organizations all over the world to create a united front so that we can create an opposition towards imperialism headed by U.S. imperialism. The second international assembly of the ILPS was held in Eindhoven, Netherlands. There were about 230 delegates there from over 30 countries. It was a coming together of activists, organizers, representing different organizations from different countries. There was Turkey, the Philippines, Hong Kong, Bangladesh, Palestine, Iraq, just from everywhere. And it was a coming together of people who had, you know, similar experiences within their own countries of fighting for national liberation, fighting against U.S. intervention, and they established a declaration to abide by, and it's a sort of a guide to set the ground rules for an organization like this that doesn't submit to any political party or religious groups or anything like that. But it's a people with common interests and a common goal to dismantle U.S. imperialism. What I got most out of the conference was the sharing of personal stories from different people. The thing that I kept hearing over and over again were the same stories that I would hear from the Philippines, the same types of suffrage, the same types of struggles. And it just made me realize that the Philippines wasn't alone in this struggle for national liberation. At the women's workshop in particular, there was a woman who had a very, very strong presentation on the situation going on in Iraq, especially with their women and the types of abuses and just human violations that are being committed against women in states of war. In Palestine is another place. But in general, there was just this common theme of people having the same struggle because of a common enemy. And what I brought back with me back in the States is that us living in the belly of the beast, we play such a key role in putting more pressure on our own government, because it's really evident that all these other third world nations are, you know, suffering. And there's more that we can do here. I think we can play more of a vital role being here in the belly of the beast. Because the ILPS represents a struggle that is happening to our own people here in the States. I mean, they fight for their basic rights to education, the basic rights to a livable wage, rights to healthcare, and that's all the same types of things that we're struggling with even within our own people here, the oppressed people within the United States. In relating it to history with the experience of our African-American slaves, the Mexicanos that have immigrated to this country, millions of other immigrants that have come to this country and, you know, facing the same sorts of oppressive conditions that are being experienced in other third world countries. And so if we can just look at our own situation, especially for people of color, if you just think within your own families or within your own experience, the types of oppression that you've experienced, that's a real personal, tangible way to connect these experiences to the more global international struggle for liberation. It hits very close to home, and the ILPS is, I think, plays an important role in trying to consolidate all of these forces, you know, all of these people from all over the world that suffer these same types of oppression.
At the Northwest Conference, many people spoke about the history that formed the ILPS. For members of the National Organizing Committee for Bayan USA, Rhonda Romero and Kualu Landai, this history takes place in the Philippines. We begin with Rhonda Romero and her knowledge of the Philippines Democratic National Movement.
The movement that I can speak the best on is the Philippine National Democratic Movement. And I wanted to just spend a few moments describing it to use it as an example of what we mean when we say a national liberation struggle and its contributions to the anti-imperialist movement. The Philippines for over 100 years has been an object of U.S. imperialism ever since the turn of the last century, Philippine-American War, 1898 to 1902. This continued on with the enactment of treaty after treaty, trade and military agreement, which enabled the U.S. to control industries and land and locate military bases and troops in the Philippines, to stunt the development of the nation's economy, to enforce the feudal landlord's control over the majority of the nation's land, prop up puppet president after puppet president, and this has continued further with the support of dictators, increasing human rights violations, covert counterinsurgency operations, which became then the model for what they did in Vietnam in the 60s and early 70s, what they also did to the Black Liberation Movement here in this country, and this war on the Filipino people has never stopped ever since.
I'm Kawal Ulanday with the Bayan National Organizing Committee and also the Committee for Human Rights in the Philippines. The main problems of us in the Philippines, which is U.S. imperialism and the fact that we're semi-feudal, semi-colonial, and bureaucrat capitalists, these were our problems decades ago. These are our problems today. And so when we look at it, U.S. troops in the Philippines denying us of our sovereignty and also terrorizing our people, creating prostitution industries against our women, bringing nuclear weapons to our land, even though that's against our constitution, saying that, oh, the bases are closed. But really, the passage of the Visiting Forces Agreement puts ships on every commercial port, which is better than bases, because you're not just in Subic and Clark. Now you're all over the archipelago. These things are U.S. imperialism. It started in the turn of the century, cannot separate the past from today. The U.S. troops that are being sent there by the thousands right now for training are actually also engaged in the active combat, which is also against the Philippine Constitution. Classifying national democratic leaders as terrorists by the real terrorists, which has intervened in the peace talk. There was a peace talks going on in the Philippines between the National Democratic Front of the Philippines with the GRP, which is the government. This is very significant because this recognizes that there is a civil war and an armed struggle going on that has got to where you have got to sit down and talk to both opposing sides, which gives lots of credibility to our movement to be able to sit with the government at this level. And when our organizations and leaders were classified by an outside entity, imperialist intervention, it then ended our peace talks because you're not supposedly supposed to sit down with a terrorist, even though we weren't saying that about sitting down with the terrorists who we were sitting down with, you know, in the first place. This is something, again, not separated from the past, because in the 70s when martial law was passed and a lot of groups were declared illegal, it caused an underground, you know, which has actually helped our movement. But still, again, future policy, same as before. So we know what we got to do.
And what to do was expressed by most of the speakers through a message of international solidarity. One guest speaker who shared this message was Radical Arab Women's Activist Network member and associate professor, Nada Elia.
One of the very popular images of successful activism, which I'm sure we are all familiar with, is all the little fishes that form the silhouette of the big fish that can then swallow up the one big fish. That, to me, is an idea of the alliance building, the coalition building that gives us the critical mass that can then overcome the one oppressor. In order to achieve that big fish concept, we must look at what unites us across borders so that we can achieve international solidarity. And these borders, we must become aware of that because they are so. The borders are becoming extremely permeable. Above all, we must avoid fragmentation. We must avoid the illusion that our issues and concerns are not related. That I, for example, as a Palestinian academic, have little, if anything, in common with a Filipino nurse, a Native American student, a Jamaican filmmaker, an Indian construction worker, an Indian Microsoft employee, or a poor working Caucasian lesbian. What we have in common is that we are all victims of systems of capitalism and imperialism, of racism and heterosexism, and we have everything to gain from joining hands, from sharing strategies, from building alliances to confront the systems of oppression.
Nada Elia begins to speak about airbags, immigration, and thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife, to reveal how dominant discourse affects science, history, and religion. These examples are meant to reveal ways of confronting systems of oppression, as well as means for coalition building.
The dominant discourse is official discourse that permeates every single aspect of our life, from the most secular to the most religious. The first one is science. Airbags save lives. Okay, and this is an example that is supposed to be an extremely objective scientific fact. Airbags in cars save lives. We should know that the reason that we always are told to keep kids in the back seat is because the impact of an airbag in the front seat, should there be a crash, is more detrimental to the kid than if there was no airbag, because the impact of that airbag can be fatal to a child under a certain weight, under a certain height. Now, the fact is those airbags are actually fatal to anyone who is under 5'4". And the average woman in the U.S. is 5'4". So basically those airbags that supposedly save lives have been tested over and over again with crash test dummies of the Caucasian male who is 5'7 and above. So this is a statement that from the dominant discourse that silences basically the humanity, the existence, the danger, and the safety of anyone under 5'4", but it is presented to us as an objective scientific fact while silencing so many people. And this is one example of the dominant discourse. Anyone under 5'4 is actually threatened by the airbags. Airbags save the lives of certain tall people. The U.S. is a nation of immigrants. I think this is very obvious to everyone that it is silencing the experiences of both Native Americans who never immigrated and Afro-diasporans, the slaves who, given the choice, would never have chosen to immigrate to the U.S. where they became slaves rather than stay in Africa. So this is another example from history that we assume at face value is very objective, but that is silencing the experiences of many people, of two very significant constituencies of the U.S. population. The third one, oh, I love that one. It's from religious, and the reason I chose these three is to show how on every level of our discourse we are being silenced, from the scientific to the historical to the religious. Thou shall not covet thy neighbor's wife. The overwhelming majority of people are silenced by this. Only heterosexual men are addressed by this statement. Gay men are not addressed by this statement. Heterosexual women are not addressed by this statement. Lesbian women, we know, are silenced everywhere else in the Bible, so they can't be the recipients of that statement. And yet that is a statement that is supposed to be absolutely universal, unquestionable for anyone with any kind of ethics or morals. You know, it's just, we just assume it. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife. Yeah, of course, yeah, it makes sense to everyone. It does not make sense to everyone. The overwhelming majority of people are silenced. So I think with these three examples of the dominant discourse, once we start looking at what the dominant discourse does, the dominant discourse always reflects only the interests and the experiences and the knowledge and the safety, and addresses basically the people in power. And when we look at who is being silenced by the dominant discourse, we immediately see that it is the majority. And that's where I want us to start looking at the similarities. We are silenced by the dominant discourse. The dominant discourse is not out to protect us. And that's the room for coalition building. Our experiences may be very different. If I am, for example, a heterosexual woman, I may think that my experience is very different from a gay man's experience. Until I look at this and I'm like, yeah, you know, we're both silenced by this dominant discourse. This is a statement that is supposed to be universal, that does not express my experience. So these are the grounds that we need to keep in mind all the time when we think of coalition building. Not our differences, but our similarities. Gloria Anzaldúa once wrote, "Voyager, there are no bridges on this road. We need to build them as we go along." I think that's a very powerful statement. We need to build those bridges. And no one's going to give us the suggestions. We need to educate ourselves. I educate myself all the time about the circumstances of others. I feel that by now I know enough about mine. you know, I mean, I certainly keep on learning about myself, about my experience and my history, but I would never be effective if I didn't also know about the history of others, because that's where I can start building alliances.
You're tuned in to People's Tribune Radio. Speakers at the 2004 Northwest Conference of the International League of People's Struggle share with us the goals of the ILPS. According to Rhonda Romero, the creation of international solidarity comes out of not only one's own knowledge of history, but of knowledge of other people's struggles as well. She stresses this importance when speaking on international solidarity.
The purpose of anti-imperialist international solidarity is to support the struggles for national liberation, national independence, and self-determination against the oppression of imperialism toward the objective of defeating imperialism. To kind of clarify, one, national liberation movements need support for their national liberation struggle. It sounds repetitive, but what does that mean? That means that countries in which there's an active movement for liberation, such as in Iraq, such as in Colombia, and Nepal, and India, and Philippines, and Palestine, and Turkey, and Peru, these countries have active movements for national liberation. And while each movement may have its own long-term goals and strategies, they each objectively help each other by exposing the weaknesses of U.S. imperialism, by stretching U.S. imperialism resources, and by reclaiming land and reclaiming resources that U.S. imperialism had controlled. And what does that mean? You're taking away some of the weapons that U.S. imperialism has to wield against the people. Of the current armed conflicts in the world, I have to say that the armed resistance of the Iraqi people is the most focal in today's world. And while over the past 10 years, the U.S. has used primarily low-intensity counterinsurgency-type tactics against national liberation movements, not any less violent than war, where you actually have counterinsurgency programs and lots of funding going toward military states and actually sending of some U.S. special forces into these countries to teach how to torture and to actually implement torture in those countries. It was low intensity. But now, under the current so-called U.S. war of terror, or on terrorism, they're using open war and launching open aggression against countries. And really, in the case of Iraq, it's a direct colonial relationship again. So resorting and reverting to these same old tactics, which are barefaced aggressive imperialism. Second thing, independent anti-imperialist countries and governments also need support for nation building or reconstructive efforts and for their struggle against imperialist attempts to destabilize and subvert their governments. By now, the Bush statement on the axis of evil has gone into notoriety. Everybody refers to it all the time. But we see that, and we see Bush's statements about Cuba and Bush's and Kerry's attacks on North Korea and Iran, countries which are sovereign, which refuse to cave in to the U.S.'s demands to open up their markets, allow unfettered capitalist investment, to give up their self-defense and their right to self-defense, being attacked by the U.S. Socialist countries need support for progressive positions on important world issues and for the proper projection of the successes and advances of socialism. So again, those countries which are asserting a different way as opposed to what the U.S. and imperialism are asserting in the world. And anti-imperialist and progressive workers and people's movements here in the United States, in Canada, in the advanced capitalist countries also need our support. And this is what we folks here in the belly of the beast represent. When we talk about building this kind of solidarity, we're not talking about qualified solidarity, like, oh, well, if you just give up the armed portion of your struggle, if you just lay down your arms and wage your national liberation struggle peacefully, then you can have the support of our movement here. Or if you just wouldn't challenge the patriarchy of the movement and you just, you know, agree to have, allow, you know, men to run the show and women to take a back seat, oh, you know, then we'll support you. It's not qualified support. We're talking about building genuine solidarity on equal terms with respect for the countries to be able to determine for themselves how they choose to wage their struggles. And that's what I think is often the most frustrating for people of the third world, of oppressed nationalities, fighting for our liberation in dealing sometimes with anti-imperialists here in the United States. There is still that chauvinism. There is a level of comfort that we have here, which allows some people who call themselves anti-imperialists to be able to take a back seat or be kind of like your armchair quarterback and say, well, you know, yeah, I think that's just not the right way. And they do it from the comfort of their homes. I think what we're saying is that genuine solidarity means solidarity and respect for the strategies and tactics that a movement chooses for themselves.
Educating ourselves on the histories of struggles around the world can create an awareness that helps people fight oppression and exploitation. It also reveals the violence often used to oppress and exploit. We hear from Nada Elia on the evolution of violence with regards to women's rights, and Rhonda Ramiro on violence in the Philippines.
Many imperialist wars are being waged under the fake pretense of liberating women, when these wars aggravate the already strenuous circumstances of women, both here and abroad. Women suffer disproportionately from wars, and women must unite against wars. Again, let's not have strange bedfellows. Being a woman does not make one a feminist. I'm not going to join hands with Madeleine Albright, or Laura Bush, or Condoleezza Rice, or Gloria Arroyo. But I do know that as wars are waged, average women in the US, who may seem to me at first as my enemy, average women in the US are losing as much as average women in Palestine, not financially, but we're losers in a war. US support to Israel, for example, certainly means that every taxpaying American is paying anywhere from $40 to $50 per day for Israel, and that means that some of the social services here, in fact, practically all of the social services, and certainly those that address women's needs, are being cut short, so that we don't have sufficient childcare centers, we don't have nurses in our schools for our kids. So as a Palestinian woman, rather than see the differences with American women, I should see how both of us are suffering from those wars. Women have historically been the spoils of war and part of the conqueror's loot. However, as contemporary wars are increasingly fought in civilian inhabited areas, be those large urban centers or isolated agrarian villages, rather than on distant fronts. It used to be at one time that wars meant two guys with guns aiming at each other. That's no longer war, you know? I mean, even when there were two guys or two armies of guys pointing guns at each other, all of societies were affected, but this is no longer how wars are fought. Wars are fought now today in cities, in villages, and women are certainly affected during the war. For example, through the systemic gang rape of women that happens over and over again in war, forced impregnation, sexual enslavement, and the intentional infection of enemy women with HIV and AIDS. That's one of the latest developments of war, is that, you know, males who are known to be HIV positive are made to rape enemy women in order to infect them with AIDS. So that's what we're looking at when we look at how wars affect women today. There's gang rape, there's sexual enslavement, there's intentional infection with HIV and AIDS. On the domestic front too, men become more abusive of their own spouses as they engage with impunity in ever greater violence on the political and military fronts. So women today face greater sexual violence, both as members of the vilified other, the enemy camp, so they are faced with sexual violence, and also as the significant others of military men, because once you engage with violence, you cannot leave that at the door as you go home. In fact, that's very much something that is recognized in the army, because part of the debriefing of returning soldiers includes a unit on domestic violence. It's acknowledged that once you have engaged in violence, you don't wash your hands off of violence. It becomes ingrained in you. And domestic violence does come home to the women.
You're tuned in to People's Tribune Radio. Throughout the show, we have heard from speakers who participated in the 2004 Northwest Conference of the International League of People's Struggle. We conclude today's program with the importance of the ILPS and its struggle against imperialism.
We do need to build bridges and forge alliances. We, women, gays, people of color, we are the majority, and we are the losers in imperialism, racism, and hyper-masculinity. But we also have the numbers. We need to work together. We need to educate ourselves about what's going on in the world. Precisely because there is so much to resist, and we all have such limited time, limited energy, and limited resources, we need to come together to pool our knowledge, to pool our strategies, and our experiences. It's the only way we can win. Thank you.
Kawalu Landai provided additional insight on how to view our future, as well as the significance of the International League of People's Struggle.
I think it's really important for us to not look at the future as something about question marks. Because it has not happened, We think that we don't really know what it holds. Our future has already been reflected in a history of U.S. imperialism and capitalism, that our future is already reflected in what we are seeing today. So we already can look at our future with exclamation points versus question marks about what U.S. War and policy means to us today. Most importantly, our future, therefore, is then reflected in how we learn from how our people's struggles have dealt with this in the past, so that we can meet imperialist policy as it unfolds today, the Department of Homeland Insecurity, the Hatriot Act, the Coalition of the Killing, the so-called Axis of Evils, and the onslaught of the War of Terrorism. We can meet not only head-on, but in a way to defeat it at the strongest level of international solidarity at a time when our enemy is more isolated than it ever has been. Internationally and domestically, we now see that our future depends on the level of our unity together and the level of our resistance. And what I really appreciate about the ILPS is it lays out these brilliant 18 concerns that, like, no matter what we're working on internationally and here, it falls under those concerns. And it gives us a framework for, like, organizations who never worked with each other but are for queer rights to unite under concern number 18. And, like, they've never met each other, and now they met each other. And it makes them stronger. It makes individuals who don't have organizations that are also want to fight for these same rights the ability to go in and meet with that committee under that concern, and then open up the possibility for that individual to become part of an organization, because we're talking about building organization. And so the ILPS framework sets us up incredibly to do that. And on the reals, you don't even really have to be anti-imperialist to join under some of these concerns. So again, in another incredible way, opening our movement up in a broad way where you know that jobs for the poor and land for the farmer, you don't have to be anti-imperialist or all these other labels to know that's what are some of the basic needs of our people. So I just want to say that when it comes to our future, it could look very dismal if you depend upon the election and if you depend upon the realm of reform. But on the other side of it, and on the people's side of it, our future against U.S. policy and war is the most hopeful and inspiring future when you think of it in the realm of people's struggle. That our struggle is not separated by oceans and landmasses, but it represents an international global response to a global attack. And since we know that this is what we're lacking in this country, we really want to recognize that and be responsible for building it. An international united front has to happen in order to be able to push back and defeat U.S. imperialism that is international around the world, but just a little bit lacking in the belly of the beast. And today is where we fill that void. So under that, it's very hopeful, because we know that repression builds resistance, and we're seeing deeper repression. And I just want to again just say that people do not only make her story, but people make today and people make the future. And if we see it that way, then our future under war and U.S. policy actually is very promising, as crazy as that may sound. I want to thank everyone for coming here today. Let's make her story happen, and today and for tomorrow. Mabuhay, international solidarity.
That's it for this edition of People's Tribune Radio. If you would like to find out more information about the International League of People's Struggle, check out the website www.ilps-news.com. That's ilps-news.com. PT Radio is brought to you by the League of Revolutionaries for a New America. The League advocates for a cooperative society that nurtures the peaceful, equal, and full development of all people. If you would like to find out more about People's Tribune Radio, our other print and media resources, or a list of our speakers, please call us toll-free at 1-800-691-6888. Once again, 1-800-691-6888. Also, if you can, visit us on the web, www.lrna.org. I'm Kenny Shook, and on behalf of the League of Revolutionaries for a New America, we'd like to thank you for listening, and please join us next time for People's Tribune Radio.